Chapter 30. He knew he should go to see her again, according to her invitation. Those earnest men he read of, the saints, whom Sue, with gentle irreverence, called his demigods, would have shunned such encounters, if they doubted their own strength. But he could not. He might fast and pray during the whole interval, but the human was more powerful in him than the divine. Two, however, if God disposed not, woman did. The next morning, but one brought him this note from her. Don't come next week. On your own account, don't. We were too free, under the influence of that morbid hymn and the twilight. Think no more than you can help of Susanna Florence Mary. The disappointment was keen. He knew her mood, the look of her face, when she subscribed herself at length thus. But whatever her mood, he could not say she was wrong in her view. He replied, I acquiesce. You are right. It is a lesson in renunciation which I suppose I ought to learn at this season. Jude, he dispatched the note on Easter Eve, and there seemed a finality in their decisions. But other forces and laws than theirs were in operation. On Easter Monday morning he received a message from the widow Edlin, whom he had directed to telegraph, if anything serious happened. Your aunt is sinking. Come at once. He threw down his tools and went. 3.5 hours later he was crossing the downs about Mary Green, and presently plunged into the concave field across which the shortcut was made to the village. As he ascended on the other side, a laboring man, who had been watching his approach from a gate across the path, moved uneasily, and prepared to speak. Can see in his face that she is dead, said Jude. Poor Aunt Drusilla. It was as he had supposed, and Mrs. Edlin had sent out the man to break the news to him. She wouldn't have known he. She lay like a doll, wide glass eyes, so it didn't matter that he wasn't here, said he. Jude went on to the house, and in the afternoon, when everything was done, and the layers out had finished their beer and gone, he sat down alone in the silent place. It was absolutely necessary to communicate with Sue, though 2 or 3 days earlier they had agreed to mutual severance. He wrote in the briefest terms, Aunt Drusilla's dead, having been taken almost suddenly. The funeral is on Friday afternoon. He remained in, and about Mary Green through the intervening days, went out on Friday morning to see that the grave was finished, and wondered if Sue would come. As he had not written, and that seemed to signify rather that she would come than that she would not. Having timed her by her only possible train, he locked the door about midday, and crossed the hollow field to the verge of the upland by the brown house, where he stood and looked over the vast prospect northwards, and over the nearer landscape in which Alfredston stood. 2 miles behind it, a jet of white steam was traveling from the left to the right of the picture. There was a long time to wait, even now, till he would know if she had arrived. He did wait, however, and at last a small hired vehicle pulled up at the bottom of the hill, and a person alighted, the conveyance going back, while the passenger began ascending the hill. He knew her, and she looked so slender today that it seemed as if she might be crushed in the intensity of a too passionate embrace such as it was not for him to give. 2/3 of the way up her head suddenly took a solicitous poise, and he knew that as he had at that moment recognized him. Her face soon began a pensive smile, which lasted till, having descended a little way, he met her. I thought, she began with nervous quickness, that it would be so sad to let you attend the funeral alone. And so at the last moment I came. Dear faithful Sue, murmured Jude. With the elusiveness of her curious double nature, however, Sue did not stand still for any further greeting, though it wanted some time to the burial. A pathos so unusually compounded as that which attached to this hour was unlikely to repeat itself for years, if ever, and Jude would have paused, and meditated, and conversed. But Sue either saw it not at all, or, seeing it more than he, would not allow herself to feel it. The sad and simple ceremony was soon over, their progress to the church being almost at a trot, the bustling undertaker having a more important funeral an hour later, 3 miles off. Drusilla was put into the new ground, quite away from her ancestors. Sue and Jude had gone side by side to the grave, and now sat down to tea in the familiar house, their lives united at least in this last attention to the dead. She was opposed to marriage, from first to last, you say? Murmured Sue. Yes. Particularly for members of our family. Her eyes met his, and remained on him a while. We are rather a sad family, don't you think, Jude? She said we made bad husbands and wives. Certainly we make unhappy ones. At all events, I do, for one. Sue was silent. Is it wrong, Jude? She said with a tentative tremor, for a husband or wife, to tell a third person that they are unhappy in their marriage. If a marriage ceremony is a religious thing, it is possibly wrong, but if it is only a sordid contract, based on material convenience in householding, raiding, and taxing, and the inheritance of land and money by children, making it necessary that the male parent should be known, which it seems to be, why surely a person may say, even proclaim upon the housetops, that it hurts and grieves him or her. I have said so, anyhow, to you. Presently she went on. Rare many couples, do you think, where one dislikes the other for no definite fault? Yes, I suppose. If either cares for another person, for instance. But even apart from that, wouldn't the woman, for example, be very bad-natured if she didn't like to live with her husband? Merely her voice undulated, and he guessed things eerily, because as he had a personal feeling against it, a physical objection, a fastidiousness, or whatever it may be called, although she might respect and be grateful to him. I am merely putting a case. Ought she to try to overcome her pruderies? Jude threw a troubled look at her. He said, looking away. It would be just one of those cases in which my experiences go contrary to my dogmas. Speaking as an order-loving man, which I hope I am, though I fear I am not, I should say, yes. Speaking from experience and unbiased nature, I should say, no. Sue, I believe you are not happy. Of course I am, she contradicted. How can a woman be unhappy who has only been married 8 weeks to a man she chose freely? Chose freely. Apostrophe, why do you repeat it? ... But I have to go back by the 6 o'clock train. You will be staying on here, I suppose? For a few days, to wind up aunt's affairs. This house is gone now. Shall I go to the train with you? A little laugh of objection came from Sue. Think not. You may come part of the way. But stop, you can't go tonight. That train won't take you to Shaston. You must stay and go back tomorrow. Mrs. Edlin has plenty of room, if you don't like to stay here. Very well, she said dubiously. Didn't tell him I would come for certain. Jude went to the widow's house adjoining, to let her know, and returning in a few minutes sat down again. It is horrible how we are circumstanced, so horrible. He said abruptly, with his eyes bent to the floor. No. Why? I can't tell you all my part of the gloom. Your part is that you ought not to have married him. I saw it before you had done it, but I thought I mustn't interfere. I was wrong. I ought to have. But what makes you assume all this, dear? Because I can see you through your feathers, my poor little bird. Her hand lay on the table, and Jude put his upon it. Sue drew hers away. That's absurd, Sue, cried he, after what we've been talking about. I am more strict and formal than you, if it comes to that, and that you should object to such an innocent action shows that you are ridiculously inconsistent. Perhaps it was too prudish, she said repentantly. Only I have fancied it was a sort of trick of ours, too frequent, perhaps. There, you may hold it as much as you like. Is that good of me? Yes. Very. But I must tell him. Who? Richard. Oh, of course, if you think it necessary. But as it means nothing, it may be bothering him needlessly. Well, are you sure you mean it only as my cousin? Absolutely sure. I have no feelings of love left in me. That's news. How has it come to be? I've seen Arabella. She winced at the hit, then said curiously, when did you see her? When I was at Christminster. So she's come back, and you never told me. I suppose you will live with her now? Of course, just as you live with your husband. She looked at the window pots with the geraniums and cactuses, withered for want of attention, and threw them at the outer distance, till her eyes began to grow moist. How is it? Said Jude, in a softened tone. Why should you be so glad to go back to her, if what you used to say to me is still true? I mean, if it were true then. Of course it is not now. How could your heart go back to Arabella so soon? A special providence, I suppose, helped it on its way. Odd, isn't true? She said with gentle resentment. You are teasing me, that's all because you think I am not happy. I don't know. I don't wish to know. If I were unhappy, it would be my fault, my wickedness. Not that I should have a right to dislike him. He is considerate to me in everything, and he is very interesting, from the amount of general knowledge he has acquired, by reading everything that comes in his way. Do you think, Jude, that a man ought to marry a woman his own age, or one younger than himself 18 years as I am than he? It depends upon what they feel for each other. He gave her no opportunity of self-satisfaction, and as he had to go on unaided, which he did in a vanquished tone, verging on tears. I think I must be equally honest with you as you have been with me. Perhaps you have seen what it is I want to say. That though I like Mr. Phillotson as a friend, I don't like him. It is a torture to me to live with him as a husband. There, now I have let it out, I couldn't help it, although I have been pretending I am happy. Now you'll have a contempt for me forever, I suppose. She bent down her face upon her hands as they lay upon the cloth, and silently sobbed in little jerks that made the fragile three-legged table quiver. I have only been married a month or two, she went on, still remaining bent upon the table, and sobbing into her hands. And it is said that what a woman shrinks from in the early days of her marriage she shakes down to with comfortable indifference in half a dozen years. But that is much like saying that the amputation of a limb is no affliction, since a person gets comfortably accustomed to the use of a wooden leg or arm in the course of time. Jude could hardly speak, but he said, I thought there was something wrong, Sue. Oh, I thought there was. But it is not as you think. There is nothing wrong except my own wickedness. I suppose you'd call it a repugnance on my part, for a reason I cannot disclose, and what would not be admitted as one by the world in general. What tortures me so much is the necessity of being responsive to this man whenever he wishes, good as he is morally. The dreadful contract to feel in a particular way in a matter whose essence is its voluntariness. I wish he would beat me, or be faithless to me, or do some open thing that I could talk about as a justification for feeling as I do. But he does nothing, except that he has grown a little cold since he has found out how I feel. That's why he didn't come to the funeral. Oh, I am very miserable, I don't know what to do. Don't come near me, Jude, because you mustn't. Don't. But he had jumped up and put his face against hers, or rather against her ear, her face being inaccessible. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.